Planning Commission order, first on the agenda is special use permit requested from the school cafeteria LLC, Mr. Todd Holtman. He is requesting a special use permit to convert the existing cafeteria to 4 apartment units. Mr. Holtman, you want to say anything?
Thank you very much for having me. I am applying for the 4 apartments. It's the original cafeteria that was probably built in the 50s. The space has been for lease for the past year, hoping to find a commercial application. I'm not expecting that to happen. Having great success with residential applicants, and I think I can fill that. Bring some more people to downtown, and I think the services will follow. So I'm applying to convert that approximately 4,000 square feet into 4 separate apartments.
These are 2-bedroom apartments?
Probably 2-bedroom apartments, yes.
Will these be ADA compliant? They're all going to be on the ground floor?
I think it's unlikely they'll be ADA compliant because there are only 4 in the unit, and you have to have, I think, far more than 4 to require ADA compliance.
Any other discussion?
I'm sorry. Oops. I'll turn this off.
The brew house process is underway, but I think we're probably 18, 24 months out on that, and the construction hopefully will be starting in the back for the 16 residential units. Long term, there may have been some other possibilities, but it's pretty far back off the street, so it's, you know, if it was a commercial space, it's hard to see the cafeteria from the road. I'd hope to find something culinary, catering company, something along those lines. I had a meeting with the school board, tried to get the triplet school to possibly expand. They were talking about needing to expand there, and they would have had a ready-made culinary space available. So the superintendent came, the director of culinary school there, they came and looked at that. They said that there might be funding hurdles. I told them I could find private sponsorship for any funding hurdles to overcome that, that I would do whatever it took to get the culinary school in that building, because it had been a great compliment to the project. And it would have been a nice counterbalance because the school would have used it during the day, the brew house would be visiting in the evening. So ultimately, couldn't overcome the fact that they would have to keep administration in 2 places. And
you haven't started on these apartments yet, have you?
No, ma'am.
No, okay.
No, it's just closing the building about a month or 2 ago, so there's been no activity to date. But tried quite a few other things in addition to having listed with the realtor. The town was gracious enough to allow me to put a sign up in anticipation of maybe something coming to promote some development, but there has been exactly 0 interest.
Any other discussion from council? Do we go ahead?
Well, I think there might be some citizens here that would like to comment.
Anybody else?
I'm not a public speaker, so please excuse me. I'm only a resident of this town. Good evening, my name is Susie Porter, and along with my partner Steve, we live across the street from Triplet at 6059 in the old log house. As most folks know it, I would like to make it clear at the outset, I speak tonight in the highest regard for our town. Since our arrival here from California, we have truly come to love this little city and wish nothing but the best for it. Things that enhance Mount Jackson's image, its reputation, and certainly its prosperity are much needed and wanted. I applaud Todd Holtzman for the recent projects along Main Street, which has greatly improved the look of our town. That said, this is where I stand on the development of Triplet. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. I spoke at the last meeting regarding the project and expressed our concerns to the development. I still remain apprehensive about the presence of a brew pub, to me, a bar, in a residential area. Parking noise and always a threat of petty crime are issues that are associated with it. I was also worried about the disruptions that the building of duplexes in the rear would bring. After the meeting, Todd, and I truly appreciate this, visited our home and offered me a guided tour of the school to see for myself what was proposed. Outside the brew pub, what was intended for the school's interior now has changed. Housing was never mentioned. And yet now I learn a plan to build 4 apartments in the old school cafeteria space, each to be about 1,000 square feet in size. And I'm sure the initial intent again will be high-end apartments. I question the certainty of that, for the units are small. But beyond that, this seems to me to be only the beginning of a bigger goal of turning Triplett into an apartment building. Do new homeowners in expensive duplexes in the back want an apartment in their backyard? Would businesses want to open a shop literally next door to apartments? I am active in this community. I'm involved with the National Trust for the Preservation of Historic Buildings. I sit on the board of Belgrove Plantation, and I will be the chair next year. So I am concerned with what goes on in the valley. Triplett is a lasting emblem of the history and heart of this town. We need to treat it with the respect it deserves. Thank you.
Anyone else to speak?
I just have a question, because we are, I'm Dominique Hoffman.
Okay, nice to see you.
Nice to meet you. We are right next door, and I was wondering how the construction affects the debris, the noise is not, while during the construction we're not here all the time, I'm more concerned about the debris and what the construction would.
May I speak to that?
Sure.
Construction happens for the most part during business hours, 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., typically on weekdays. Everything is permitted, and all of the entire process is governed by the town of Mount Jackson, both zoning and the county through the permit process and the inspections. So we have to make sure that we are not disruptive to the neighbors, there isn't any type of construction overflow, and we have to respect those property lines, and that will certainly happen.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
Did I hear you say business hours 6 to 5?
Yes.
6 in the morning till 5?
Sometimes they start at 6, sometimes they start at 8.
That's right early for
it is early. Yeah.
For you've got housing right there.
Yeah. There's no constraints with the county. I mean, we could work 24 hours a day.
I'm not
like.
Asking about what the county wants or what I'm asking what the citizens want.
Right.
You know, is it fair to have them awakened at 6 o'clock in the morning with banging and carrying on? That's something that you could control if you wanted to, could it not?
It is if we wanted to slow the project down and restrict the hours, we could work from 12 to 1 each day, and that could be it. Whatever. Yeah,
yeah, that works.
Does the town have any noise ordinance?
I believe there's something in the code. I'd have to check to see what the hours are. I mean, typically there's noise constraints.
So as long as Mr. Holtz is meeting those constraints, then he's within the town's rules.
Right.
I will say, as just to address one of your concerns, as someone who frequents the Woodstock Room House, my concern about having a bar in town, a bar, is negligible based on the way that the Woodstock Room House is run, because it is extremely family friendly. It's not sort of a dive, if you will. We take our kids there a lot, and there's lots of kids there, and it's just a nice place for families or people to go spend the evening and hang out. So the fact that those folks are going to be the ones involved doesn't raise any concerns for me about having, I understand it's right across from your house, which is different.
Well,
but
excuse me.
No, go ahead.
It is different. It's not that it's a brew house. I actually am kind of now just starting to enjoy the fact that it might be there, that it would bring jobs, that it will benefit the community. My other concerns are that I didn't even want to bring up today. That's going to be parking and can I park in front of my own house? I don't park in front of my own house often. I park on the side street. But there's a lot of issues, and that's all right. I've let that go. The brew house is going to be there, and that's just fine. My biggest concern is now if other space in the building isn't rented, does that become an apartment building? If it does become an apartment building, does that become low-income housing? Does it, you know, a lot of these will affect the town. Then you're talking about parking issues. If you've got 16 units in the back and you have conceivably 32 cars, at 2 cars a unit, you have 4 units, you have an additional 8 cars, where does it, you know, it just, it opens a, just interesting. I'm just tossing that out into the universe. These are my concerns. And Steve, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I know everybody, but Steve is ill. He's on oxygen 24/7. You know, I don't know that he wants to be awake.
The construction will be a fraction of the noise the tractor trailers make when they go down Route 11 with their engine brakes.
All right. A fraction.
Your house is this far from Route 11.
Okay, then we're not going to worry about that.
It's a fraction of noise.
Okay, but if it does become a problem, I would complain about it. But we're not going to go to any place we don't know what it's going to be yet. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I just wanted to know really what was going to happen, and I do have to think about him.
Can you address parking then?
Yes, we're working with the architect now, who he's currently designing. His name is Jason Neal, and he designed the brew house in Woodstock, so he's got a good track record and he's known with that entity. So we had a meeting today, as a matter of fact. He's got some preliminary plans that are very nice, and he is designing the parking for the brew house in conjunction with mine, because the two properties are going to be shared, and I have a parking easement, so we'll design the parking together. So we're going to meet all the town and county requirements for spaces.
But you will have parking for the apartments?
Absolutely.
In the back?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have a diagram or a schematic of what the apartment area is going to look like? I mean, I noticed when I looked at them, there are 11 windows on the side that face the gym. So are your entrances going to be on the side toward the gym? Toward the slope that goes downhill?
Prior to the next planning commission and council meeting, there'll be an overhead drawing of the apartments, and we'll have a nice overhead drawing of the whole parcel showing proposed parking entrances. To date, all we have is the street, the existing triplet road, and 3 entrances to the back, but we'll have that filled in before the next meeting so we can submit that to the town for the town's approval, showing the parking spaces for both places, and we'll have a good conceptual front drawing of the school, because we need to dress up the garage portion. You know, it's kind of industrial looking with an inexpensive sheet metal above the brick. So we'll tile that together. I doubt I will have a conceptual drawing on the cafeteria, but the windows will certainly have to change some so that it's, you know, it's like you said, it's more of a long open space now. It will be some spaced out windows and probably, you know, just 4 single doors on the north and south side.
And the distance between the two buildings is adequate for fire and all that?
It is, yeah. Keep in mind there was school there for many, many years, and the school buses came and went, the teachers, and
it would have been grandfathered in.
Sure, it wasn't a traffic problem.
That era.
And because they're block buildings and low flammability, and from any point in that school, for example, there are 4 or 5 very quick exits. But we also have to go through all of that permitting with the county and satisfy the fire marshal. So all those are part of the process to make sure that it's done
so
properly.
I think there's
going to be very little grandfathered when you change the use. If it stays a cafeteria, I wouldn't be here and I'd do exactly what I want. When you start over and change the use and you build it out, you meet the latest codes, fire
protection.
So
is the cafeteria zone business?
It's a B1. B1 district.
So we're going to change it to R?
We're not, no.
No, okay.
No, it'll remain B1, but he's applied for a special use permit.
Okay, I was just...
To put apartments within a B1 zone, so he's not going through the changing, he's just adapting to meet within the existing code.
The brew house already has its entity formed. It has a by right permit issued from the town for that use. So the brew house is clear to go, but we do have to meet the VDOT requirements for the entrances and the parking, as well as the town requirements. So that building is not going to have housing in it.
it's not even conducive with the way it was built. It's not an option. No housing. That's gonna be really nice.
You're talking the original part of Triplet, not the new portion, would not have apartments?
None of it would have apartments because the engine bay area is the brewery.
Right.
And the tasting room.
Right.
And then the long-term plan is that the operation can grow into the school building. And they're gonna have a restaurant and there's a connector, so there'll be a restaurant space there in between. They're gonna have a full-service restaurant this time. So the Woodstock concept is you kind of go to the counter and you order. Here they're gonna have waitstaff. I think that's gonna be more conducive to the sales there and more of a sit-down, more appealing operation. And the gymnasium is like going back in time. It's a perfect time capsule from 1955. It's spectacular. It needs to be preserved. So that's going to absolutely be preserved. And I would see the stage being used for music in some cases and maybe some tables in there long term for people to. And every time the doors are open, people come in and want to see. And, you know, people from the ages of 80 to about 35 have all been to school there when it was either the whole school or the middle school. So kind of a lot of interest for nostalgic reasons. And the building does need to be preserved. Like it is, and that was one of my main goals. And I worked very hard to try and get the fire department there. And when that was not successful, now I work very hard to preserve that building and keep it historically accurate, as I am keeping the other buildings around town as historically accurate as I can, while still keeping them viable and full of people.
Can we vote on this tonight?
No, we'll wait for him to get his plans probably include as an action item. In October. I have a question. Do you have a name?
No, I do not have you. What is your name?
Dominique Hoffman.
Okay, thank you.
This is the public hearing. Or?
If no one else has any questions.
Gavel the public hearing closes and then we have our regular meeting.
Correct. Yep. Okay. All right.
Can everybody,
we
all stand.
Please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No, we can continue on with the agenda.
Okay.
I mean, it's a short agenda tonight, so.
Okay. Approval of the previous minutes. Someone.
So maybe we approve previous meeting minutes.
Second.
All right, Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Ms. Miller.
Yes.
Mr. Andrick.
Yes.
Ms. Miller.
Yes.
Mr. Hines.
Use permit Cypress Creek Renewables expansion of the solar farm on the Whitehurst property along Turkey Knob Road. Introduction and set joint public hearing for October the 1st, 2018. And this is who?
This is Matthew Gilland.
Okay.
With Cypress Creek.
Okay.
Great. Well, hello everyone. Thank you for having me here. My name is Matthew Gilland. I'm a project developer with Cypress Creek Renewables, and we are the company working with Robert and Eleanor Whitehurst on the continued development of the Mount Jackson 1 solar farm, which was approved by your commissions and councils last year. And I'm also here to one, give you an update on the progress of that, as well as introduce two new applications which we would like to put before you for your consideration this fall. I must apologize, I had a presentation for you, but I didn't have the right connector. So next time I'll be sure to be prepared for that, but I'll try and talk through it, and you know, please, if I've glossed over anything, feel free to stop me as I go. And before I start, how many of you were on the commissions or councils last year for the Mount Jackson One Solar Project? Okay, seems like just about everyone, so I might not go too much into the details of the nature of the projects, unless you'd like me to, you know, in terms of the technology and what kind of equipment goes onto the site.
And just a quick question, are you with a different company than presented to us last year?
Yes. Planning to cover that, I'll just get right to it. So Virginia Solar is the company that came before you last year. Matthew Mears and Lee Downing, we bought that project from them. They're a small development shop. Our firm, Cypress Creek Renewables, does the engineering, procurement, design, and actual construction of the projects, as well as the operations. So we're a full service development shop. We still work closely with the folks at Virginia Solar, but we now own that, and we're also introducing these two new applications.
Is that normal for a project to get started by a smaller company and then purchased by a bigger company?
Yes, it's very common. A lot of these small development shops don't have the capital necessary to pay for the equipment. It can be millions of dollars for the transformers and modules and steel. So they'll partner with someone like us, and we'll pay them for the project, and then take it over from there. But you know, I still call them weekly to check in and ask questions about the designs and site plan and everything.
Is this the only one you have in Virginia?
No, we have 20 projects in Virginia at the moment. So why don't I dive in just a little bit more about the company and what we're doing in Virginia. Cypress Creek is the third largest solar farm developer in the United States. Our principal place of operations is in North Carolina. We've built over 250 solar projects, just like the one here, Mount Jackson One project. Most of our projects are in the 20 to 200 acre range, so we're very familiar with the types of issues and design concerns in communities like yours, which is why we think we're good partners for the Whitehursts here. We are a full service shop, as I mentioned before, and that means we develop the properties, we'll go through the studies with Dominion Energy, we'll do the environmental diligence, looking for wetlands and testing the soil, actually getting the permits through town councils like yours, and then taking it through the engineering and design and construction process, and ultimately operating the project for its lifetime. We have over 20 projects in development in Virginia, counties such as Orange and Buckingham and Powhatan, Cumberland, Halifax, all over the state. We're very excited about these projects though, because the Whitehursts are, well, if you know them, they're great to work with, and it's a good property. There's great sunshine, as many of you know, though this week I think is a little bit different. So brief update on the first project, Mount Jackson One. We're currently in the stormwater permit process with the county. We expect to break ground in the middle of next year, barring the unforeseen. So we are in the design phase. We've got our engineers working on the detailed plan sets, which you know, we'll be reviewing with you, Kevin. But these are very real projects, and we're excited about them. So, you know, when you're thinking about that one and considering the proposal, I hope it's welcome news to know that it is going forward. The projects I'm proposing to you today are Mount Jackson 2 and Mount Jackson 3. We're very creative at naming projects, as you can tell. They would be located on the adjacent properties at Whistler Road and Turkey Knob. They would be of a similar size to the Mount Jackson 1 project, The Mount Jackson 2 would be 18.5 megawatts, or about 180 acres. Mount Jackson 3 would be about 150 acres. And this is all along the same Whitehurst tract. And I had a graphic to show you the aerial, but hopefully some of you are familiar with the land and know that basically we would want to have access come off one of the side streets off of Turkey Knob, and the connection to the power lines. The power lines run up the east side of Turkey Knob Road, and so that's where the projects would connect. But for all intents and purposes, these would look and smell and sound the same as Mount Jackson 1 project.
Everything will be on the west side of Turkey Knob.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that the power lines they connect to run up the east side.
I forget, what was the size of the first one?
180?
180,
okay.
Yes.
This is going to be 150.
So we have two applications that we would put before you. One would be for about 170 acres, and the other is 150. And the first phase was 160 acres.
160, I know.
Yeah.
It could be 160 to 180.
Yeah. The conditions and the permit are for 160 acres,
okay.
So. That's the plan there. You know, one of the big benefits of these projects is the economic development. There are a number of jobs, construction and related jobs that come with these. We expect on the order of 100 to 200 different construction jobs during the lifetime of the construction phase. And with that comes a certain amount of local spending, which we think is a great benefit of these projects to the community. The spending in food and services and accommodations, raw materials, local workforce can exceed $20 million for projects of these size. The projects also have a number, maybe five or six, regular maintenance jobs to maintain landscaping, clean the panels, maintain equipment, and with that comes a sort of sustained economic benefit. Couple hundred thousand dollars a year of local spending that this would bring into the community. These projects would also include 5 years of rollback taxes. So the land is currently zoned for agriculture, but when a solar use comes in, it pays 5 years of taxes for a commercial or an industrial zone up front. So that is another benefit that comes to the community. And there's another angle, which is something that I'm personally excited about. Cypress Creek cares deeply about engaging with the communities that we do these projects in. You know they don't exist in a vacuum. So we're very active in STEM education, workforce development, job training, and veterans initiatives. So one of the reasons I've come out here this week is to learn more about the community and the types of organization and institutions that can benefit from partnerships with companies like ours. So it really is something that we think will be beneficial to you, to the community, and to the Whitehurst, whose land it is. And my job is really to make sure that I'm addressing the concerns of your commission and council, whether it's related to the design of the project or other elements of it. Some of the common ones we get are related to the visual. Of course, on the first phase, there were the Georgetown Road, some neighbors across the street. So what Virginia Solar did there and what I would include in these proposals is a vegetative buffer and two rows of evergreen trees, as well as a 150-foot setback from any residences and a 50-foot setback from the property line. We would propose to allow the landscaping and roads within that setback area, but I think that goes a long way in addressing some of the potential visual impacts these can have to neighbors. There's also many folks are concerned about glare from the panels. Let me tell you, we are more concerned than anyone about glare, because if the light is reflecting off the panels, it means they're not working. We cover them with an anti-reflective coating to make sure that they're not causing any issues to the roadways or to neighbors. There's no lighting on these projects, not like you would see in a traditional parking lot. There may be some security lighting, but it would be shielded and cut off, so you wouldn't expect any nighttime lighting. On the subject of noise, I know that came up earlier. Once these are built, they should essentially make no noise. The pile driving for the pillars or piles that support the racking is noisy, so we would include a condition to restrict that to normal business hours or sunrise to sunset, you know, whatever you find appropriate as we talk through the permit. And then, you know, in operation, there really shouldn't be a lot of people going to and from the site. These things work by themselves. They're monitored remotely. When a piece of equipment runs at the end of its life, we'll send out some maintenance folks to replace it. But, you know, there'll be some people out mowing and picking weeds and making sure the landscaping is working. But other than that, it's not a occupied or highly impactful land use. It should not demand much of your public services, you know, police, fire, it doesn't need plumbing or sewage. With respect to traffic, some folks are concerned about that. For the construction phase, there would be, of course, traffic to and from the site and equipment brought onto the site. So I would include a condition for a construction traffic management plan and work with Kevin to identify a route that is best for the town and hold that to the contractors. And then once it's operational, there really shouldn't be daily visits to the site. It would really be intermittent. Finally, on the subject of safety, there is high voltage equipment on these sites, you know, transformers like you might have on a light post or somewhere else. So we would include a security fence at least 6 feet tall, just to keep people out. They're not dangerous sites, but if you poke your hands into the wrong place, you know, it's just better to have people not on them. So that's sort of a brief summary. I don't have a detailed plan to show you yet because I'm out here to get your input, whether it's about something like access or visual or screening, anything else. We're really at the early stages of putting together this application, so I'm happy to answer any and all questions. I will also be in town tomorrow for any of you who would like to continue the conversation, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you. Thanks.
The buffer for greenery and everything.
Yes.
That would be along all road frontages or any boundaries that would be adjacent to property that people are living in?
So the very minimum, adjacent to any property with residences. I would think that we should include some level of buffer along the roadways as well. Two rows of evergreens might constrain this site a little bit in terms of the space that we need, but it's certainly something that we can work on if that's of interest to the town. Yes.
And the maintenance of the property, that would be something that could be let to a local person, a local company?
Yes, it could. We always seek bids from local firms, both for construction and operation. To the extent you know of any firms, I'd love to get in touch with them because they do need to qualify through the engineering process because there's a certain level of federal standard for these. But if they qualify, we'll certainly include them in the bid, and that could certainly be a local firm that does that.
And on the landscaping thing, before we had in phase one, landscaping was going to go where houses. So in Georgetown and off of Walker Road, there would be landscaping. But then off of Turkey Knob, since it faces an industrial park or in our property, which we didn't care about landscaping, we did not have it there. So that's just something to answer your question.
Yeah. Basically, where people are.
Where people would, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interface with the property.
In the buffer zone, there is trees planted along?
Yes.
There is. There will be.
Yes.
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 OK. and there's a question down here.
You mentioned rollback taxes. From my understanding, none of this acreage is anything but farmland, is that correct?
Currently it is farmland, yes.
So where are the rollback taxes?
Well,
there's nothing to roll back.
So my understanding of the way these work is that the real property rate on an industrial zone.
It's from being taken out of land use.
Right.
So land use has different than ag, so you have to pay a rollback when you take property out of land use.
Right, so it would be 5 years.
5 or 6 year old.
5 years of taxes.
Of land use tax, not taxes, but land use taxes.
Yes, land use taxes.
And that will affect the town, but then that'll be all, and I don't know how significant that's gonna be. With water and sewer, you said it doesn't need any water and sewer? I was under the understanding that you had to clean those things every now and then.
Well, it rains quite a bit out here, so we don't use the same, sure. We don't irrigate the sites. Any water that's needed to clean can be trucked onto the site, but I believe we do not irrigate or run irrigation on the projects.
Okay, I was reading on your website and it was talking about keeping those clean.
Sure.
Well, you needed water.
Yeah, certainly.
And it's in a farm area, and farmers tend to raise a whole bunch of dust all the time, and you're probably aware of that.
Yeah, we don't like dust. It makes the panels less efficient, so we'll usually plant a ground cover, so grasses or some things along those lines, and then mow it regularly to prevent erosion and dust control.
And the fence that you're talking about, is this around the entire piece of property?
Yes, the
chain
fence.
Chain link, I assume?
Yes, it would usually be a chain link security fence with barbed wire.
Do you ever put in any other kind of fences besides chain link? There are a whole lot of them out there.
Well, we're certainly open.
A lot more attractive than chain link
fence.
Yeah,
it's certainly something we're open to exploring. The standard is chain link, of course. There's some decorative fencing, but the number one priority is safety. So any fence we use has to be something that can work with the height requirements.
Right.
But certainly something to like to talk about if you have any ideas.
I can show you pictures.
Yeah, that would be great.
Does your site plan require a runoff holding pond or not? In regards to runoff of water into, you know, the adjacent property owners and everything?
Yeah, so it's a good question. We do not anticipate requiring a holding pond for runoff. There's very little in the way of impervious surfaces that are included in these projects. Only the concrete pads underneath the transformer and inverter would create additional runoff. The rest of the water should infiltrate locally into the soil. Yes.
Earlier in your presentation, you mentioned used the word lifetime of the project, and if I remember correctly from the presentation from the earlier owners of this project,
yes,
that when they talked about when the project no longer becomes viable for whatever reason is no longer needed,
yes,
that they would come in and remove the equipment and restore the land to its original condition. Is that also the case with this?
Absolutely. So that's called decommissioning in the industry, and it's actually in the lease agreement that I have with Robert and Eleanor Whitehurst. So we are required, once the plant is no longer operational, to remove all equipment and restore the land to its original condition.
What's your
end of life
timeline?
I think it's within 3 or 4 months, but I would have to check the exact amount.
It's a 35-year contract
on the property, but I mean the end of life. I mean, I come from a technical industry,
sure.
So end of life, okay. What's your end of life for the equipment?
So it depends on the equipment. The modules themselves will usually, you know, they degrade over time, and usually around 15 to 20 years is when we would replace them. With more efficient, cheaper, newer models. The inverter can last about 10 years before it is replaced, and all of that's handled in the maintenance, which is taken very seriously throughout the life of the project.
But you're thinking at the end of 35 years it'll be decided whether to continue with the project or?
Right, the lease agreement we have is for 35 years. The, you know, at that stage, we would need to come before you again, likely for an additional permit or a...
I won't be here. As somebody else has said, I'm not here.
What's the oldest project that your company currently has in Virginia?
In Virginia, none of our projects are yet operational. Virginia's still a new market.
All 20 of them.
All 20 of them, so are in development.
How close are you to the nearest one?
So Mount Jackson 1 is one of the furthest along that it'll be built by and operational by the end of next year. We expect to have 5 projects operational by the end of next year, all of a similar scale to Mount Jackson 1 solar.
So where are your long-term projects? Like, where are the projects that have been, that you have the, like, you have a
mm-hmm.
baseline from?
Yeah, so North Carolina is our biggest market. We have over 100 projects built there. They've been operational for 3 or 4 years, many of them. You know, the Northeast, Massachusetts, New York have some operational projects. Our company is 5 years old, so these are fairly new projects in general. It's a very nascent industry still.
So how do you know the lifespan?
If you're
as new to this as essentially we are.
In terms, like, do you mean the lifespan of the project or of the equipment?
Yeah, I guess what is your company's experience based off of, out of projects on the West
sure.
Coast?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of projects on the West Coast which have been built and studied. There's many projects on the East Coast and all over the U.S. which we can look to for data in terms of studying the lifetime. In terms of the 35 years, that's a lifetime created by our lease with the Whitehursts, and it can be decommissioned at the end, or if everyone's interested, it could be a new project could be created there, but that's... you know, the projects last as long as we keep the equipment up to date. It's a well-developed industry in the U.S. by this point. We know the length and lifetime of the equipment fairly well. You know, there have been utility, you know, solar farms since the 1990s, so we have at least 15 to 20 years of data on the lifetime of the modules and the inverters and such.
So how do you have the infrastructure for something like this?
Would you elaborate a little bit?
I guess, so I feel like last year when we talked about this, it was sort of the same deal. You know, the same explanation of the project and how it worked, lifespan, decommissioning,
right.
all that kind of stuff. Again, another, I believe, newer company, no projects in Virginia. There was one in Powhatan, maybe?
Powhatan, yes, the Scott one project.
Yeah. So
buy that one out?
No, that one's owned by Dominion Energy, but Virginia Solar did develop that project, and so, you know, that's a project in the ground that we can look to for.
So that company, you all bought this project because that company didn't have the means to handle a project of this size. You were going for a grant, was that right, Robert, that there was a grant of some sort that?
No, not for the grant. Was for the industrial park.
Okay, I thought there was some sort of
federal
funding.
We did. We received
the
grant
for
stuff for
solar.
No, we received the grant for the industrial park. The
okay.
county never followed through.
Okay. So I guess my concern is that the same thing we heard this year, that you have essentially kind of the same experience, but I'm nervous. You're making me
sure.
nervous with only 5 years.
I understand. We've built 2,500 megawatts of projects operational, and these projects are combined for 40 megawatts. So we've already built and operationalized over 250 of these same project. I think if there was any company that you'd want to do this, it would be ours. We're very good at what we do. We take these very seriously. We're the third largest in the country, and we specialize in the sort of small to medium scale projects like these. We have an excellent engineering team. We construct our projects on schedule, as I think you'll see next year when we break ground. And, you know, I will always be a phone call away and working closely on this project and these two applications through their lifetime. So it's, you know, to the extent I can give you more information or detail. I'd be happy to, you know, follow up with some examples or refer you to other towns or counties where we've worked if you'd
yeah,
like to speak
a minimum,
with them.
We would want to call some of the locations,
yeah.
Perhaps the 4-year ones in North Carolina, and just kind of see how it
sure.
worked out and how the process went and where they are now.
Yeah, that would be no problem at all.
From what I think I'm hearing you say is that last year you're hearing the same presentation from someone else, and I'm thinking it might be helpful, Matt, if you can explain the timeline of when you come to us to when it's built, because I think maybe you're wondering, is it ever going to get built, or is it just next year going to be a different person telling you the same thing, whereas maybe you can say this is why it takes so long from the moment you go to a lease to the moment that you plug it in and it's...
Yeah. Would you like me to answer that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, part of that is correct, that if in a year somebody else is like, oh, now we bought that company, or we bought this project,
sure.
and we're like, we're just going to keep hopping along.
Right.
At what point does somebody say, yeah, we're taking this and we're doing it? And
yeah, it's
taking
a,
ownership, I guess.
It's a very understandable concern. In this case, we are the ones taking Mount Jackson 1 over the finish line, and we will. The process itself in Virginia takes 4 years, about, from the moment you sign the lease agreement to when it's operational. You spend the first year studying the impacts to the grid with Dominion Energy and conducting diligence on the land to make sure the soils will support the piles and the equipment, that there aren't any wetlands or endangered species, and that the local government will approve the permit application. In the second year, you're working through the next phase of study with Dominion Energy and understanding how much it'll cost to build that infrastructure. At the same time, you're going through the state of Virginia permit by rule process, which is an environmental, a state level environmental permit. Mount Jackson 1 has received that permit. And so that phase, you can begin the stormwater permit process, which takes about 6 months, which is what we're doing on the Mount Jackson 1 project. So that's about 2.5 years to 3 years, give or take, of development work. All during that time, you're lining up the financing and the engineering of the project, because these are many millions of dollars, and most companies, ours included, we connect people who have money to invest in these projects and to get them built. After that 3-year point, that's when we can begin construction, and the construction can take anywhere from 6 months to 1 year. So,
6 months to 1 year
for the from the time you put the shovel in the ground to the time it's up and running. And the reason it takes so long is that you have to also time it with an outage in the grid. Dominion will do planned outages so that you can actually work on their power lines and connect it to the project, because they don't want to shut off power all the time. So there's a lot of sort of art and planning that goes into the scheduling of these projects. And for many companies, Virginia Solar is a small shop. There are a few folks there, and frankly, they were ready to retire, and they know that Cypress Creek has a sterling reputation in the industry, and that we would be a good partner to finish the construction of these projects. So we work hand in hand with them. I think when you talk to some of the other towns and counties we've worked with, you'll see that, you know, we do get projects built, and I certainly appreciate the concern about the newcomer, and we don't have any intention of these changing hands before they're all built.
You're not just a venture capital, you're an actual jobber.
We're a jobber. We have 600 employees. We're spread all over the U.S., but mainly in North Carolina. We're the ones who people give the projects to get them built.
So you actually have the construction equipment, literally.
So it's a mix, right? sometimes they'll subcontract the pile driving, but we have the construction management, the engineering, the procurement, and we do have a staff that does run construction, but given the volume of projects that we have in construction, we do also use third parties.
Right, so you for example, ours would be subcontracted.
Yeah, Exactly.
To someone else, because the gentleman mentioned the name of a company when he was here the first time, the Solar Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Will you use the same one that they did? Or
it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's too early to tell. Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think it's a little too early to tell. We're still working on the design. We can't bid the project for construction until we have our stormwater permit, because that drives the design. Yes?
Is any of the energy that's going to be developed there going to be used anywhere around here? Where's it going?
The electricity will go onto the distribution grid, so it's the same power lines that run through your community. That electricity can be distributed locally or regionally. It's really at that point a matter of how power is drawn from the grid. But yeah, it's used in Virginia for the most part.
Does it have an effect on electric costs?
At the individual project level, it would be very incremental impact on costs, but in general, solar is one of the cheapest forms of electricity that can be built this day and age. It's as cheap as natural gas, and only wind energy is cheaper. So in general, it will contribute to cheaper electricity prices.
Okay, you mentioned
Dominion Power? Do you have Dominion Power?
I have Dominion Power at one place, and I have SVEC at another.
If you go into Dominion Power's website,
mm-hmm.
they have a lot to say about these type of projects.
Okay.
I get their newsletter every month, and there's a tremendous amount of information, and they're really, really big on this type of stuff.
Right, and actually the website, Cypress Creek Renewables, you all can find a lot of information about what they do, where they are, their projects, and so forth. You stated there'd be 5 to 6 jobs. Is that per 1, 2, and 3, or in 1, 2, and 3, there'll be 5 to 6 jobs?
Yeah, so those numbers are for 2 and 3.
I'm sorry, you're still not telling me. Is it 5 for 2 and 5 for 3?
It's 5 for 2 and 3. So,
you're talking maybe 10 jobs altogether is all it's going to bring in here for about 500 acres
along
worth
with,
of.
That is one of the many benefits, I think. There's a lot of construction jobs which come with it. And a lot of people say construction jobs are temporary, but that's the nature of the business, and they go from one job to the next. So when you have another year's worth of construction jobs, well, that's hundreds of people who can support themselves for another year. So there's a good amount of benefit, I think.
Are you going to be doing your bidding here in Shenandoah County? Are you doing your bidding all over the state or the country or what?
So it's a mix. Some of the work is very technical, and it has to be done in a way that results in a safe project. And any firm that meets the qualifications of the federal standard for these types of electrical infrastructure projects can bid. We certainly aim to engage and attract local bidders, which is one of the reasons I'm here. I'm always looking for companies that might be interested, and we'll keep their names on a list, and when we get to the bid stage, we'll include them in the bidding, of course.
All right. There is, with our special use permits, there is a timeline cutoff date, and since this thing is going to be going on for years, perhaps it should be written into the SUP that up front, rather than having to renew it every 18 months or 6 months or whatever it is after it's had the initial 1 year.
Yeah, so one of the conditions we will request would be that the permit not expire for 4 or 5 years, because that's the amount of time it might take to develop it. And it was in the permit for the Mount Jackson 1 project, so we would request that here as well. Yes.
Can you tell me anything that other than the building, which will take a lot of time to do?
Sure.
As well. Once that's gone, and you have about somewhere between 7 and 10 jobs maybe.
Mm-hmm.
What other benefit does that give the town of Mount Jackson?
That's a good question.
Seven or 10 people that are employed.
Pardon?
That's 7 or 10 people that have employment.
On 500 acres.
Yes,
of land.
But there's also the business tax. They will pay a business tax, which right now.
Will they be paying a business tax, Kevin? This is a farm.
What do you mean by a business tax?
Well,
business license tax.
Business license taxes and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's those taxes, the real property taxes. I mean, there's basically 35 years of guaranteed, you know, real property tax revenues.
Well,
there's,
we already have that, but it's on farmland, so it's not a whole lot of, you know, it's not anything more than we're getting
now. Sure.
Still,
the licenses are not expensive.
There's still 150 acres of industrial land across within the growth area next door to Jonathan Day's is another 80, and then the county owes 40, like 60 up from that. So you still have about 250 acres of growth area on the east side of Turkey Knob. So this project would give the long-term smart growth that we heard a lot of people wanting. It locks up the property. It doesn't have us dividing it and doing this. There's a project here that's renewable clean energy, which is greatly needed in the country. We still have industrial property. When the county gets their act together across the street, once that builds up, infrastructure is redone, population can grow at a normal rate. Then you have these other sites coming out. After 35 years, you have another 500 acres of the town for whatever the town needs, either industrial, commercial, or residential. So it's a long-term growth while making the town and the entire community look good, because this is the future.
Do we set a public hearing for next month? Is that correct? So, I mean, that's in the minute, I mean, in the agenda here, so.
They'll be, Cypress Creek will be working on their application, and we'll have
and
that.
And you'll have, like, the schematic,
yes.
All that.
Yeah, so I'm working on that in the background and here to request
it'll
the
be just
hearing.
Pretty similar for those that were here when Virginia Solar
yeah,
did.
It's
one of the same presentation and the,
yeah,
and,
okay.
The, and the documents that go along with the application.
Okay. So that's going to be for our next meeting, October the 1st. Correct.
Yep.
Okay.
I move that we go ahead and set the introduction and second set a joint public hearing for October 1st, 2018.
I second that.
Who?
Can I second that? Okay. Alrighty. Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Andrick?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
And Mr. Hines?
Yes.
Do you have any zoning?
No, there was nothing from the Board of Zoning Appeals.
All right, Mr. Andrick, tell me.
Nothing
really. Nothing? Oh, I'm too ready. Okay. Zoning?
Nothing new to see, nothing new.
All right, Board members' concerns? Anybody?
I would welcome Mr. Thomas and Mr. Hines to the Planning Commission.
Yes.
And they're two newest members. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They've already been inducted, sworn in there, all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to ask a few questions. And I don't know, due to the Planning Commission, where this would fall. Mr. Holtzman, mentioned about trucks using Jake brakes, okay, the noise they create. And I have noticed an increase in trucks using Jake brakes on 11. I traveled professionally for over 40 years, and I was in a lot of towns that right at the beginning of the town entrance and right where you get off the highway, great big signs, no Jake brakes.
We
can
beat that horse to death.
You can't do it in Virginia. If they have an accident in our town and that sign's put up, we're liable.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just about.
I went over that because I'm getting tired of hearing them coming down.
And I mean, I've been overseas and in foreign countries that is like, you make a noise and you're in major doo doo. I was just curious because.
I made a bunch of phone calls on that and flat out was told that they brought it up here too. If they have an accident in our jurisdiction and we have a sign up that says they can't use Jake brake, boom, we're liable. Now, there are other towns in the state of Virginia that have those signs, because I've seen them.
Yeah.
But, and I asked them, suppose we put one up and says, you can't use your Jake brake unless absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
It's, well, how are you gonna know if it's necessary? Pretty much you're stuck with that stuff.
The month before I got laid off, I actually was in a small town, got off the interstate, and there was that great big sign, and I'm like, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind having one of those in my town.
I think Roanoke has them.
This was down in Tennessee. They got them all over Tennessee.
Roanoke has them. Stephen City has them. But if should something happen, Stephen City is liable for whatever occurs.
All right, I was just curious.
Yeah, believe me, I was.
Okay, I'll shut up now.
No, you're good. I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Second.